Welcome to another episode of The Brand Called You, a podcast and podcast show that brings you leadership lessons, knowledge, experience, and wisdom from thousands of successful individuals from around the world. I'm your host, Ashutosh Garg, and today I'm delighted to welcome a very, very accomplished medical professional turned professional from London, UK, Dr. Gary Crotez. Gary, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for inviting me to come on.
Thank you. Gary is an executive coach, an author, a keynote speaker. He's the host of a podcast, which is titled The Unlock Moment, and he's an author. And all of you know, I'm always very partial to authors. He's an author of a book titled The Idea Mindset, and you can see the book just behind Gary. So Gary, before we start talking about coaching, tell me about your own journey in brief and what motivated your transition from being a doctor to becoming an executive coach.
That's a very interesting question. I've had a very eclectic path and recently really found the kind of connecting thread, which I think is about conversations, which is a conversation I had with a world leading coach recently. And we were talking about exactly this. I started out training as a medical doctor. I spent 8 years in medical school, did a PhD in a science lab. And in my late 20s, figured out that I didn't want to practice as a doctor. And so I switched from then into business. I spent 10 years in strategy consulting in the UK, but working on global projects. And then in my late 30s, figured out that I should go get a proper job and moved into retail. So I joined a global mother and baby retailer called Mothercare, which is an institution in the UK, but in 50 countries around the world. And I became their group strategy director and eventually on their executive team through a massive period of sort of turbulence and turnaround in the UK, but expansion globally. And when I came out of Mothercare, I started a more portfolio career. I did some work in luxury retail. I did some projects and I began my professional coaching career. I'd always been having conversations with people. I'd always found that fascinating from medical school through business and now into coaching. And I think that when I started my professional coaching training, which was back in 2020, I realized that the part of my life, the part of my work that I loved the most was the conversations one-on-one with people. And I realized, and I think I realized this in retrospect, I'm deeply curious about people. So now in coaching, in podcasting, in these kind of conversations, I just love exploring ideas with people.
How amazing.
And I just think it's an amazing format to do it.
How amazing. Thank you. So let's talk about your new avatar as a coach now. When you work with people and you said you'd love to get to know people more, what in your view are some of the common challenges that hinder individuals from realizing their full potential?
So I work a lot with people in mid-career, often senior people, often very successful people. And I particularly focus on people who are successful but have really ambitious goals. One of the things that I think is very, very common, because our families or society or our school teachers or our first bosses, they instill in us this idea that there is a right way to be, there is a right way to lead. And so people come to a point in their career where they're starting to really emerge as leaders. And they look to other people and say, I'm supposed to be copying what they do because they are successful. And so one of the very, very common conversations I'm having with people is, what if that's not you? What if that's not your way to be really successful? So I think there's a huge thing around embracing your unique talents and strengths and figuring out how are you going to be a great leader? But so many people are held back by, I'm seeing other people that are successful. I'm trying to copy them.
Amazing. And, you know, given the incredible diversity in your own background, medical doctor, corporate world, and now coach, how has your own diverse background influenced your coaching philosophy and your approach?
I talked to somebody recently and in coaching, and they said, you know, I'm on this path. I've been on it a long time. I'm very successful, but I'm not sure that I enjoy it. And yet I feel that it's too late to change. I wish I'd realized this before and changed earlier. And I said, how old are you? And he said, 38. And I laughed. And I went, that was how old I was when I started in retail, having never worked in retail before. And I've worked with people in their 20s, 30s, 40s, 70s, who were going, actually, it's just the next phase of my life or career. When
Correct.
do I want to pick up and do the thing I want to do? So I feel in my own journey, I felt like I can do different things and it's okay not to have done it before. Just because I haven't done it before doesn't mean I can't be successful in the future. And so it's unlocking people's ability to say, if now is the time to go into something that I've not done before, but I really want to do, why not now? I think that's
Very
really
impressed.
powerful.
What a great response. Thank you. My next question is, how do you help leaders build resilience in today's incredibly fast-paced business environment?
It's such an important question. It's coming up all the time. I think there's a philosophical part and there's a practical part. The philosophical part is about clarity. So what is really important right now and what is not important right now? So I often work with people around this framework of needs, wants, and compromises. What are the things that you absolutely need right now? And it should be a short list, but you should be really clear on those things. What are the things that sometimes it feels like you need, but actually they're just things that you want? And it's okay if some of them you don't have. And what are the compromises that you're prepared to make in order to get all the things that you need?
Right.
The practical side is we only have 168 hours in the week, and we
Correct.
have to sleep for quite a lot of that time. So people who are what I say on the hamster wheel, they're spending 50, 60, 70 hours a week chasing firefighting. And what they need to be doing is saying, okay, when I focus on those things that I really need, I need to be spending significant time, one day, 2 days, 3 days a week, focusing on the big stuff. And I need to compress the firefighting into a more limited amount of time because that can kind of take over. So I think there's a piece about how do people figure out what's really important and then carve out intentional time, significant time to be spending on those things? I'm working with a senior leader at the moment who is he has a he's a sales leader, and he has a sales target in the billions of dollars, so very, very significant role. And we had this conversation about how much time should you be spending just building the relationship with the people that are underpinning your massive sales goal. And he went, one day a week, 2 days a week, possibly even 3 days a week. How much time are you spending? 1 hour a week, 2 hours a week. So it is a fundamental shift. It's not about carving out a little bit here or there. It's stepping back and saying, okay, I need to redesign the way I'm spending my time.
Very interesting. Thank you. My next question is that having coached people in over 25 countries, have you noticed any cultural nuances in how individuals approach personal growth and success?
A really interesting question. My instinct is that there's more that aligns us than divides us, I think. I've worked in North America, South America, Middle East, Asia, and of course the UK and Europe. What's common is this thing that I talked about before, which is in our heads is the voice of people. Sometimes it's our own voice, sometimes it's our parents' voice, sometimes it's our teacher's voice. I find in some cultural contexts, those voices are stronger or the voice is a different voice. Very often people say, I remember my parents saying, doctor, lawyer, engineer, or failure. That's a common thread in lots of different cultures around the world.
It's the same in India.
Right. But I think that the where you need to be working is the same place, which is, you've got to hear those voices. Because they're there. You can't, it's not about imagining that they're not there because they are there. But it's about figuring out how to say, I can hear that voice, but it doesn't mean that I have to act on it. It doesn't mean that I have to agree with it. One of my coaching clients actually names the voice. So when that voice comes into the head saying, I'm not sure you're good enough to do that. I'm not sure you have the right to do that. I'm not sure that's what you should be doing with your life. That's not how you should be leading. They give that voice a name and then they say, that person, they're with me, but I don't always agree with them. And the question is, how do you let go of that and say, I know myself? And that takes work, knowing yourself, knowing what's important to you, knowing what your values are, knowing what your purpose is, and knowing how you're going to step forward and you're going to lead. That's really important. And I think that's
Fascinating.
universal.
Fascinating. What a great response. Thank you. My next question for you, Gary, is how has technology started to impact coaching? You know, one technology is, of course, the fact that you and I are speaking. But, you know, now there's the entire concept of generative AI and so many other things that are coming in people to people, you know, interactions. How do you as a coach see the impact of technology?
It's a fascinating question. I actually spent much of last year working in a tech company that was building an app to try and take advantage of some of those things. I think there's two sides to it. I think that there are nowhere near as many human coaches in the world as leaders who will benefit from coaching. So, I don't think there will ever be enough human coaches in the world for the number of people that will benefit from coaching. So there is absolutely a need for technology to broaden access to some kind of coaching intervention. But then on the other hand, I think there are a lot of coaches who worry that technology, and particularly AI and ChatGPT, all these kind of technologies, will put them out of a job. And really, my challenge to human coaches is the AI is only going to put you out of a job if you're not a very human coach. So I think that it is a great challenge to coaches to say, be the thing that the AI can never be, which is about having presence, having humanity, building personal connection. The wonder of this kind of technology, so the fact that we can talk over Zoom or Teams or any of these kind of platforms, Google Meet, is that now coaching is far more efficient. And therefore, even for the human coaches, we can do way more coaching. And there's been data coming out recently that says that the impact of coaching is no different if it's delivered virtually compared with in person. It's a different interaction, but actually the impact is the same. So I'm a great fan of technology. I think that it is going to massively expand the benefit of the coaching style of interaction. But for good coaches who connect in with their own humanity, I don't think it's a risk at all. I just think it's additive to what we're all doing.
Well said, well said. My next question to you is that what are some of the trends that you are noticing in leadership development?
I went to deliver a workshop recently at the business school in University of Cambridge here in the UK to the executive MBA class. And I've not done an MBA. It wasn't part of my journey. And my imposter syndrome was saying to me, what can you teach and tell these people? And then I came back to a conversation I'm always having with senior leaders I'm working with, which is time and time again, people are saying to me, I'm figuring out that the old playbook doesn't work. So when I started in retail, it was the beginning of what we call the retail apocalypse, where suddenly, you know, the shift to online, the shift of stores from one location to another, the expectation of customers that they would receive discounts, the emergence of Amazon and, you know, all of these sort of players, competitive players, meant that up until then, you needed 20, 30 years experience in retail to be able to be great at it. Now that playbook doesn't work anymore. And so I think the trend is you can't look to a textbook. You can't look to the previous generation. You can't look to how it's always been done and say, that's going to work. And so we come into a new conversation about leadership, which is, well, what are you bringing to the party? What experience do you have? How can you think? How can you problem solve? How can you use data? How can you use technology in a new way? And there isn't a person, me or anybody else, who's got the answer. And you as a leader need to tap into these people and just hear from them and go, I'm going to do what they said. It all has to be adapted for your environment. And then the other thing I'll say is a really common theme coming through is you are operating in much greater uncertainty than ever before. So it used to be the case, take retail again as an example. And you know this, having worked extensively in retail as well. If you did a certain thing time and time again, it started to be quite predictive how customers would respond. Now you'll do that same thing and the customers will do something completely different. And now you have to look at the data in a different way. You have to talk to your customers in a different way and understand What's different now? And how can I start to build a new playbook of leadership? So I think being comfortable with not having all the answers, being comfortable with not having all the data, and figuring out how you're going to lead, that's where the most successful leaders are going to come over the next decade.
Well said, well said. So, I have time for two more questions before I move to your book. My next question is that what are some of the unique challenges entrepreneurs face? You do a lot of work with corporate leaders. I'd love to get a perspective on what are some of the challenges entrepreneurs and startup founders face, and how can coaching support them?
That's a really interesting question. I'm working currently with the founder of a new emerging luxury brand who's based in South America. And we had a very interesting conversation recently. And it was about the team and her role as the CEO and leader. And where we came to was there are many things that she does, there are many things that she has to be expert in as a startup founder. But the thing that nobody else can do is to be the anchor and the heart and the spirit of the brand. And I often talk to entrepreneurs and they say that bit right at the beginning, where it's you or it's you and three or four friends around your kitchen table and you're building a satellite or you're mixing a smoothie or whatever it is you're doing. Purpose and vision and values is really easy then, because you probably already know each other. You're probably connected. You probably share a lot of things in common. As it starts to scale, and suddenly you've got 10 people, or you've got 30 people, or you've got 100 people, and there are people in your business that maybe you didn't personally hire, and they might not work with you, adjacent to you, in the same building as you. How do you hold on to that thing that knitted you all together at the beginning? So startup founders have to go through this transition where first they just went, I have a vision, I have a purpose, I have values, I have an idea of how this is going to work. You have to start to figure out how you intentionally embed that in your culture, embed that in your people, so that it continues as the business grows. And some of the most successful scaled businesses, that's the thing that they did brilliantly, brilliantly well. You know, you think of somebody like Richard Branson with Virgin Group. He did at the beginning and has throughout its entire lifespan embodied the spirit of that brand, and people look to him. So I think there's a particular focus on startup founders to say, as you start to scale, how do you hold on to that thing that you do to anchor the spirits of your brand?
Fascinating. And my last question before, and then we'll talk about your book, is can you share with us a particularly transformative moment you have facilitated for a client? And of course, I don't want any names.
I think that that is a really, really interesting question. I remember the very first podcast conversation I did on the Unlock Moment. And it was an actor called Samuel Houghton. Not a famous actor, not a hugely successful actor, very poorly paid actor at that time. And he was acting in the kind of theatre that is above a pub in dodgy East London here in the UK. And he was facing into this question in his mind of success versus happiness. So his friends were saying to him, you should be pursuing these kinds of roles. You should be trying to get onto a bigger stage. You should be winning awards, aiming for that. And he said, I don't know that that would make me happy. And then he went, but if I choose things that make me happy, well, maybe I'm really happy in things that don't earn any money. So it felt like a real dilemma between the two. And he worked over a number of months with me. And he texted me one day at 4 o'clock in the morning. And he said, I've got it. And it woke me up because I hadn't switched the pings off on my phone. And I said, what have you got? And he said, I want to pursue happiness. What do you think? And I said, I think that's the right answer. I said, yes. Why? Because you've just texted me at 4 o'clock in the morning. So it must be important to you. He started to intentionally choose, when faced with a fork in the road, the path that he thought would make him happier. So he turned up to acting auditions to sing the song that he wanted to sing, to deliver the part in the way he wanted to deliver it. Even if he thought they maybe they want a different thing, but this is the one I want to bring. He came back on the podcast a few weeks ago. This is 2, 3 years later after this time. He had become more successful than ever before by showing up to do the thing that would make him happy. And he's
Fantastic.
Currently on the West End stage in Phantom of the Opera, the London production of Phantom of the Opera. It's his biggest ever part. And I said to him, what was it that brought you here on your path? And he said, because I intentionally choose the path that I think is going to make me happiest.
Incredible.
And I think that is such a great story because it's so powerful. That story has resonated with CEOs and C-suite leaders and entrepreneurs around the world that have heard it. And I said to him recently, I said, you'd never guess who listens in to this story, to your story. And they hear this through the podcast and they've gone, there's something in that for me, actually.
Amazing.
For me, that's what is so powerful about coaching. It's not advice. It's not a plan. It's not answers. It's how do you figure out what's important to you and build that confidence to pursue life in a way that is right for you and balanced for you.
Oh, amazing. Thank you. Let me now move to your book, The Idea Mindset. And before I ask you a question, I'm going to ask all our viewers and listeners to go and check out the book of Dr. Gary Crotaz on Amazon. I'll go and check it out myself. So Gary, tell me about your book. What was your hypothesis when you wrote it? And what are some of the key principles?
Well, we talked earlier about the importance of broadening access to coaching. And this is a book that makes me redundant because it is a coaching journey in a book with a lot of questions and a lot of exercises for you to work through to figure out your identity, your direction for a future with engagement and authenticity. That IDEA is the idea in the idea mindset. And it comes from the fact that when I came into professional coaching, I'd spent many years as a strategist, working with companies, working with organizations to figure out their vision, to figure out their purpose, to figure out their plan, to help their plan to take place and be successful. And I thought we could do the same thing with people. So I started when I was working with people in coaching to send them homework exercises. And I said, here's how I want you to think about creating your vision, how I want you to think about creating your action plan, how I want you to think about the team that you need to build around you, and some questions to ask and reflect on. I don't know the answers to those questions, but I bet you do. And over time, I realized that I probably had enough to turn that into a book. And that was the beginnings of the idea mindset.
Wonderful.
What the idea mindset feels like when you have it is it feels like real deep clarity. When you know who you are, what your strengths are, what's important to you, you know your direction, not necessarily the end goal, but you know, when I'm faced with the choice, am I going to turn left or am I going to turn right? When I've figured out what are the things that I think are going to make me happy, that's my engagement, and what are my values? What is my sense of purpose that I want to live my life in line with? That's my authenticity. It feels like clarity of thought, clarity of decision, clarity of action. I know who I am. I know what I think. I know how I choose whether to do something, whether not to do something. Is it about money? Is it about power? Is it about my family? Is it about my legacy? And ultimately, I know what I'm going to do next. So when I meet people who embody the idea mindset, I say to them, well, what are you going to do? And they go, I'm going to do this. And I go, and what's going to happen if it doesn't work out, if it goes wrong? Well, I'm comfortable with that. It's for me to figure out what I do next. So they take real ownership and accountability. So that's the idea mindset. It is a workbook. You write in it, you ideally in pencil, because you're going to change your mind as you go through. But it's full of exercises in 6 weeks. So it's like six different elements of the journey. And by the time you get to the end, you've got a vision, you've got a strategy, you've got a plan, you've got a team, you've thought about what's going to hold you up, what's going to trip you up, and you've thought about how you're going to communicate that to other people. So it really is a holistic coaching program for the price of a book.
Fascinating. Gary, on that note, thank you so much for speaking to me. Yeah, I mean, your journey is absolutely incredible. You know, I've not met too many people who have such diverse experiences under their belt. Thank you for talking to me at such length about coaching, about so many different aspects of coaching. Thank you also for speaking to me about your book, The Idea Mindset. Thank you again and good luck.
Thank you so much. Delighted to be here.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to the brand called You Videocast and Podcast, a platform that brings you knowledge, experience, and wisdom of hundreds of successful individuals from around the world. Do visit our website, www.tbcy.in, to watch and listen to the stories of many more individuals. You can also follow us on YouTube, Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. Just search for the brand called You.